The fact that we were compelled to live within our means, that I think was a big strength.
When the apartheid regime ceded power following South Africa's first democratic elections in 1994, the economy was in shambles and deeply unequal. Debt service costs as a share of GDP were crippling. Trevor Manuel, a veteran of the anti-apartheid struggle and appointed Minister of Finance, revamped the budgeting process and set a stringent deficit reduction target. By 2006, the economy was growing at its fastest pace in more than two decades, and the budget deficit was close to zero. Outcomes few thought possible.
You could bring people in because it was a project that people wanted to be part of. It was how we would deliver democracy. That doesn't exist any longer. The ANC that we knew doesn't exist.
Welcome to this podcast produced by the International Monetary Fund. In this episode, former South African Finance Minister Trevor Manuel reflects on a lost decade and financing Africa's response to COVID-19. Manuel spoke to Finance and Development magazine for a profile of his career as one of the continent's most effective finance ministers and one who put voice and representation of emerging markets and developing economies squarely on the international agenda. Manuel served as chair of the World Bank's Development Committee and as head of the Committee on IMF Governance Reform, and his advocacy for a level playing field continues as special envoy for the African Union for Africa's COVID-19 response and advisor to the South African president. The profile featured in the June 2021 issue of Finance and Development begins with Manuel looking back at what he believes helped drive South Africa's longest phase of economic growth.
You know, one of the issues that was fundamentally important was that cabinet has to act as a collective. It was the interpretation we gave to our constitution that the budget is the strongest statement of collective cabinet responsibility. And so the responsibility of the finance minister to persuade colleagues of the correctness of the decision. And so the technical committees that were set up by the Treasury inviting other departments to come and explain what they wanted money for was very important. The way in which we processed that through the Ministers' Committee on the Budget was important. That doesn't exist any longer. And that, for me, is the deep, deep, deep tragedy, because the kind of decade of Jacob Zuma isn't just lost as though you stayed static. You, in fact, retrogressed in a number of areas, because part of what Jacob Zuma tried to do was to take the Treasury apart. There was a sense that it's ideologically on the wrong side and it's too powerful. You need to take it apart. And that weakening has actually produced the outcomes that you now have. And if you look at how all of that has spun out of control, how the ability to collect taxes has been weakened, and how the overall allocative efficiency has been destroyed in the process, it may be the same party in power, but it's a very, very different country.
So while South Africa did emerge from the international isolation under apartheid to become one of the world's most promising emerging markets, the economy has underperformed in recent years. Manuel says membership within the country's biggest labor union, COSATU, tells part of the story.
You know, one of the big problems, and it drives all kinds of issues, probably 60% of COSATU members of public servants. Now, if you look at the pay scales for public servants in South Africa versus their peers at PPP averages and so on and so on, public servants in South Africa all do relatively well. But what that does is to take resources off the table. And so the state doesn't have the ability to deal with all the other issues. And I think that because corruption got out of hand, you kind of need a clean sweep of stuff before you can move to the next base. And, you know, when we came in 94, when you were working in the Treasury, it wasn't because people working there were paid extraordinarily, but there was an esprit de corps that drove the pride that compelled people to deliver. And that is an essential part of driving change going forward. And it's when you have the sense of together you own the issues and you agree on how to drive the agenda, then you've got institutions that can outlive ministers. Then you're not dealing with ideological stuff, which I think is the millstone around the necks of South Africans. The sense of ideological purity is actually the biggest retardant to transformation.
But 27 years into its democracy and economic transformation, South Africa is still one of the most unequal countries in the world. Extreme income disparities, unequal access to opportunities and education, and high unemployment have contributed to the persistence of inequality.
It's an unbelievably difficult issue. So part of what you have to do is, I think in the short term, be able to deal with the wherewithal of people. And so the ability to provide a social safety net is of paramount importance. It's very broken in South Africa. And the other thing is to repeatedly examine what we call the social wage. It's the quality of education, it's the quality of healthcare, it's whether your welfare system actually works for people who need it most. It's unemployment benefits for workers. It's all of those things. And it's also how cities and towns run. And if people have access to clean water, sanitation, and refuse collection, and so on and so on. And if you provide the environment where learning and teaching can take place, students do better. And I have no doubt, you know, I still am involved with education in a place called Mitchell's Plain. And when I look at the top schools there, I mean, it was a school that had 100% pass rate in grade 12. There was a school that had 99.2%. You know, for me, that is worth celebrating because it's a very poor community and you've got these results. Next door in a very tough informal settlement called Kosovo. There was one youngster who got 100% for physics. And this kid, when he was interviewed, was crying because Kosovo is so hard. It has the highest homicide rate in the country. And he was talking about how bullets fly and so on, night after night, and how you study in that environment. If you don't fix those kinds of things, people don't feel good about themselves, and you're going to battle to deal with issues of equality going forward. Social capital is a very hard issue to compute. But you know it, you can see it. You can see it in the confidence of young people when they come through the system, how they build networks, where they build networks, how it empowers them to be able to do all kinds of things in society. And without that, you're not going to be able to drive change.
As some regions are showing signs of an eventual recovery from the pandemic, countries in Africa are still scrambling for resources to support their struggling economies, many already burdened with dangerously high debt levels. Trevor Manuel says the G20's Debt Service Suspension Initiative, or DSSI, was welcome, but more needs to be done to help cover the gap in funding for the response to the pandemic.
So the first and obvious target was to try and deal with what still is a major risk, and that is the amount of money in debt service costs that flows off the continent. In terms of economic development, it obviously has a big minus sign in front of it. We were working then with a number of around $35 billion per annum, but finance ministers have actually been working on a number closer to $43 billion. And that became the first and obvious issue that we needed to talk about with the world. And the obvious place was with the IMF and with the G20. And it's out of that initiative that the DSSI was born. Now, we can celebrate the fact that $5 billion was saved from leaving the continent. But $5 billion is a far cry from the initial 35 that we were talking about. And if you look in aggregate at low-income countries and middle-income countries, what their debt service costs amounts to, it's about $356 billion. I mean, that's the amount in play. And so what the 35 does is all that it is money that actually you build a weir and you retain. It's like water retained, and hopefully governments would spend. And we've had a lot of communication about things like the acquisition of what is needed for the pandemic. And we've had discussion about social safety nets, because the issue of hunger is a paramount importance across the continent. But you also need some kind of stimulus, because the economies just sort of went into a concrete wall. And you need to breathe life into these economies again. And so support by way of a stimulus is fundamentally important. Now, the question of debt debt is the first issue, and the debt service costs and the DSSI, which I'm saying in 2020 amounted to $5 billion. It's a drop in the ocean.
So there was a debt relief program launched by the IMF and the World Bank in the late 90s called the Heavily Indebted Poor Countries Initiative, or HIPIC for short, and it was to ensure that no poor country would face a debt burden it couldn't manage. Trevor Manuel says it really did help restore economies, which meant they were able to access capital markets, and many of them cut their dependence on concessional loans.
So HIPIC was fundamentally important. But now you're dealing with major exogenous issues. You're dealing with circumstances where across the continent, as a result of very tough decisions, the macroeconomic circumstance in virtually every country had been restored to, if not good health, then at least reasonable health. And there's a curiosity about this, because as countries improved on their performance, they were able to cut their dependence on Bretton Woods financing, and they were able to access capital markets differently. But that meant that other issues entered the equation, issues such as credit ratings. And I mean, one of the things that we picked up in the past year is that the rating agencies are the rating agencies. I mean, you know, we called them out in 2008 for being lax about U.S. banks and the consequences. But they're pretty resolute. And what we found, even on the DSSI, that there are countries who are desperately in need of debt relief, but are afraid that once they apply, they're going to be downgraded. So it's a bit of a catch-22. You know, part of what the world needs is a kind of group of leaders who will take stock of the situation and then make a call.
Trevor Manuel grew up in a segregated city on the proverbial wrong side of the tracks, and it shaped his career in Cape Town's resistance movement, which ultimately landed him in jail under the apartheid regime. But Manuel says his upbringing instilled a strong sense of responsibility and dedication to help improve the lives of the people he serves.
I think that there's something that gets to you that says, I won't let circumstances get me down. There are people who I can't let down in the process. I said at my mother's funeral last year, I said, you know, she was always present in my life when I was going to make a big speech. I would be talking to my mother. She would be in the audience. And what would matter to me is, am I talking to her? Can she understand what I'm saying? Because, I mean, can I talk big economics? Of course I can. But do I need to be understood? That's a lot more important for me, because that's what makes sense in life. It's those little things that around which you build something that says you can't let the side down. So for those of our family who sit in Washington in the IMF, you can't let the side down. Okay.
Trevor Manuel served as a cabinet minister under the first four presidents of Democratic South Africa. He steered the economy for 13 years as one of the world's longest-serving finance ministers. He spoke to Finance and Development magazine for a profile piece that's now published in the June 2021 edition. Read it online at imf.org/FND or download the Finance and Development app. And look for other IMF podcasts wherever you get your podcast. You can also follow us on Twitter at @IMF_podcast. I'm Bruce Edwards. Thanks for listening.